All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of your transatlantic bridge connecting Stockholm and Sweden to Harlem, New York City, but to the rest of the world, really. Thank you for tuning into this moment. Guys, I'm really excited about today's episode because today I have invited the elder statesman of Swedish hip hop. My dear friend, journalist, writer, DJ, all-around music connoisseur with a deep knowledge and a wise man that I often consult about matters concerning hip-hop and life. My friend Nathan Hammelberg is here with us today. For those of you that don't know Nathan, you're about to get a little taste of this man's greatness. And for those of you who do know Nathan, you're going to be as excited as me that he has joined us on this moment. And as if that wasn't enough, the subject matter we're going to dive in today is Donda, Kanye West. We're really going to dive in on this one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Nathan, I'm always glad and grateful when I'm in conversation with you. I just really want to thank you for coming on the podcast and to discuss the matters of today. So let's dive in. I mean, I guess the first question I want to put to you is, are you a Kanye West fan? I mean, do you identify as a Kanye West fan?
To be honest, I think when Kanye blew, you know, or yeah, it didn't come out of nowhere. If one was into,
if one was reading the liner notes, we saw him in the production credits of on some of our favorite Jay-Z albums. Absolutely.
Yeah, but if he was that, then it was like when he came, that was such a like fresh reminder of like hip hop can be innovative and could be playful and stuff, and also. I think for me, with his production, a lot of it, he was flipping soul samples in kind of a funny way. I mean, a lot of the tunes were like just stuff hiding in plain sight. So I think my admiration
Touch the Sky, I mean, sampling Curtis like that.
I think my admiration for him is mainly as a producer, really. I'm not going to put him down as an artist, but I think... when in that time in his life, he was focused on that and sort of, he was trying to make the most out of other people or you know, contribute to other people. And then he just sort of, the same creativity went, put him in the limelight so magic happened. But I think today, I mean, it's more that I would love if he had a bit of a less is more attitude to production. And also, but I mean, yeah, I'm a fan, but you know, I'm a fan of a lot. So
exactly. And I want to establish that also for all of you who have tuned in and for all of you who are listening to us, that we're coming from a place of love. And I'm not saying that as taking a deep breath before we, you know, cut in and cut this to pieces, but really we are coming from a place of love because, I mean, first of all, we're both deep, deep fans of hip hop music. I mean, beyond fans, hip hop is, you know, shaped us into who we are and it's a part of our perspective in everything we see. But just as you're saying, you know, I would say, of course, I'm a big fan of Kanye West music. A lot of the songs that Kanye West has made have uplifted me, made me think, have opened my ears, heart, mind. You know, just from several standpoints, I'd say with Kanye, not only is he an innovative and super creative producer, but he also, like, flow-wise, just from a rap standpoint, he has often, like, surprised me with his kind of, with his elegance, you know, or elegance might be the wrong word, but just with his, he has a way of rhyming sometimes and flowing that's really skoningslust, as we say in Swedish.
Merciless, yeah.
Yeah, he can be merciless in a really cool way.
Also, that his rhyming is kind of seamless sometimes. I mean, it's not because it's like, I mean, obviously there are others. For me, the bar is sort of set by Rakim, so, you know, everybody's sub bar.
Yes. Yeah.
But still, having said that, there are quite a few people who can flow like the Nile. And I think that's the thing about Kanye. He makes it kind of effortless, which sometimes you sort of, the hooks, the punchlines, the, you know, metaphors and all that stuff bring you in. But a lot of times when it's so effortless, I would say that it actually just lets you focus on what he's trying to say. Which means that what he's trying to say comes into the spotlight for better or for worse. And that's where, absolutely. I mean, that's sometimes, yeah, it becomes a bit,
I mean, what Kanye West also has done, if we look at like old Kanye, you know, College Dropout Kanye, Jesus Walks, All Falls Down. It was from the outset, from when we heard him start rhyming, but also his wit. Like, there's a lot of humor that I felt was kind of missing from other contemporary hip hop. If we go back roughly to when College Dropout dropped, and a kind of a self-distance, and he would turn himself inside out in a very human way that wasn't, you know, especially coming from the, like, the Rockefeller family or people like Beanie Siegel or Memphis Bleek or, you know, Jay-Z himself, where Kanye had this honesty about him and kind of also coming from he was street but non-gangster in a way that was, I guess, just refreshing to my ears and probably to a lot of people. He puts himself in there in a way that I would say was unusual then in hip-hop.
Yeah, if you compare, I mean, that was a good analogy, or just to compare with the whole Rockefeller crew. I can't remember ever hearing that kind of vulnerability from, say, Beanie Siegel or Memphis Bleek. But yeah, probably from Jigga himself, though. But not as much still.
But remember, Jay-Z made on Blueprint had that, you know, I can't cry. So, or he didn't say I can't cry, but he, I can't, so I'm going to let the song cry. You know,
yeah.
Very manly standpoints, you know.
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, that's innovative in the sense that, I mean, you have that in hip-hop, and you have that in a lot of great hip-hop. You have that in Scarface does that. I mean, I seen a man cry, I've never seen a man die, and so and you have it in Tupac, you have it
actually,
in all.
That's actually an interesting capture there, Nathan, that he says, I've never seen a man cry, but I've seen a man die. And it's like, it's more in Scarface's life, it was more usual to see murders than men showing feelings.
But I mean, you know this, and well, I can tell for the I don't know, listeners, that I mean, I've been doing youth work for the last 5 years or so in violence prevention work. So I've done a lot of in different communities. There's this, I think there's a kind of holistic attitude you could say is the most meaningful way to do that. And that is to sort of, if we can't break through to make like young men allow themselves to be vulnerable, then we can't find a way to deal with like endemic cycles of violence, etc. I mean, Sweden, we are a welfare state and all that, but as I guess a lot of listeners know, we have our fair share of, or more than our fair share of violent crime and stuff.
That, absolutely. Soon to be ex-welfare state, I would say also.
Something like that. And to me, when art, I mean, hip hop in one way, when I was a kid, I mean, we're the same age. One of the cool things is to just think of, I mean, we're talking almost like preschool now. I mean, pre Sugar Hill Gang and pre Rapper's Delight on Wax or King Tim, or, you know, if you take these, I mean, I don't know, Melly Mel and people, they were probably like 14, 15 when they started hanging out with Flesh. Mm-hmm. It's super cool that they had all these braggadocious rhymes. I love it. I love the fact that people from the South Bronx, one of the most, at that time, destitute places in the Western world, with like a life expectancy of like, I don't know, 40 something. If people say, I am somebody, but they say it in a teenager kind of way, it is super cool, but it's probably not going to be so vulnerable. It's going to be a lot of super sperm. And
no, I mean, and also because vulnerability in that place and in many places today is not, doesn't equal survival.
No, no, it like, could be to your detriment even. So, exactly. I mean, you have to be somewhere which is safe to even do that. And I would say if you take JC, I mean, if he's been rhyming about the life he used to live, that is the life on the block, obviously you can't walk around eyes down indefinitely.
No. And which is interesting with Jay-Z, because he never really let go of the life that he once led. But that's been his, like, that's been his well that he's, you know, tapped for most of his artistry, I would say.
Yeah, and like informs his whole, I mean, even probably outlook on how to make it.
Entrepreneurialism and so forth and so on. KRS-One did say that there should be 9 elements in hip-hop, one of them being street entrepreneurialism. So he's definitely adhering to the old gods' ways. But okay, so first of all, you know, I mean, there's so many angles to get into this latest album from Kanye. It's very epic in its scope. I mean, 27 tracks, 108, over 100 minutes. I mean, you know, he's going on a feature length movie almost. But it doesn't seem like curated or polished or toned down, or, you know, it seems a little unfinished. Right?
More is more, but I don't know. Yeah, this thing that you're pointing at is probably one of the reasons why it's going to be spurring like indefinite discussion. And I mean, there are those albums. But having said, I think, I mean, the soundscape is still pretty tight. I mean, I'm not talking about the tunes being good or not, but I think they are more or less. But it's still, for having, I don't know, I lost count, but it's like more than 10 producers. When you have that many people involved and you still get something that is sonically has some coherency to it, then that's an achievement in itself. But
he makes beats like Italians cook food. Like, he doesn't use too many ingredients in the same dish.
No.
And that I do respect. Yeah.
Totally.
Just on that God Breathed track number 3, I think it was, where I kind of felt like it was this is the new Slaves Kanye. All right. And, you know, like relentless bars, relentless and merciless. To me, it was just, you know, and that gave me that feeling about the album on my first listen, like the first actual track that I dug into. And I was like, this is something for me, you know, was what that beat was telling me. Mm. But there is that thing that it's, you get that feeling that Kanye West is coming from, not maybe a place of desperation, but like his, all of this that is like beyond just looking at the music itself, the whole person of him and all his, you know, ugliness that he's for a long time been very kind of that he's worn on his sleeve in a way that's like, provocative sometimes, disgusting other times, just ridiculous and silly other times. You know, this is the guy who said a few years ago that if the Bible was written today, he'd definitely be in it, you know. So blasphemous, absolutely. I don't know. He's both extremely hip-hop and very unusual for hip-hop, you know.
Yeah, that was a thought I wanted to bring up, even if, like, is this hip-hop? And yeah, it is, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I think we have to land in that.
Yeah, but I also thought it's sort of, to some extent, it is post-hip-hop. I mean, in the way that, I don't know, post-punk was punk rock, but punk with other means or something. Because, I mean, just like where I come from, if you like, musically, it somehow, it was an emulation of like two turntables and a microphone or something. That's like hip-hop to me, musically, besides the dancing and graph and like...
Or let's say like this, for the past 20 years, Kanye has been one of the, or Kanye's beats, I would say, have been one of the strongest forces that have guided hip hop, or, you know, shown hip hop the way sonically.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way that Premier and J Dilla did in the 90s, and Dilla definitely still does, you know, even... May he forever rest in power. But, you know, Kanye West, his beats have pushed the envelope, making hip hop what it is today, or been a large contributing source to that, I would say.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, when you say like imitation is the highest form of flattery, I'd say even in Sweden, up and coming producers try to, there's this like very dramatic and big soundscape that Kanye has nowadays. I'm not talking about the 2004 Kanye, but when some, I mean, I think there's this, we have that thing, a kind of rapping that goes, it shifts from the introverted to the extroverted to the sort of almost pitiful themes or very almost sobbing to the extroverted and very like bombastic. And I think Kanye's contemporary sound and the sound he's had for the last, I don't know, 6 years or something is almost analogous to that. And that has even influenced how some productions in Sweden are. I mean,
absolutely.
It's not like skeletal in the way that trap could be. It's more like droning synth sounds, and it's almost like strings and yeah, a very it feels like, you know, some kind of Technicolor film but with the sonic textures instead.
Looking at it rhyme wise I'll say something that you may find you know, that you may agree with or not. To me, the best verse on the entire album, that's on the actual album, I would say, to me, is the J Electronica.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Well, I'm happy that we're in agreement on track number 17, Jesus Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, where he kind of, just in those however many bars it is, but let's guess on 16, it's a
snippet that it should have been an odyssey, but never mind, it was just a snippet we were given. Yeah,
it kind of covers the whole, it covers all bases from start to sorry, are you still there? Somebody was calling me up. No, but it covers the J Electronica verse, I think, covers all bases from start to finish on the whole. It's like, if I only need to hear 16 bars of the whole album, those are the 16 bars. Like, if this whole, if all these like release mass meetings and everything, if it was just to get J Electronica to write 16 bars, then it was worth it.
Yeah, totally. But he's also, I mean, that's, he has some kind of Stokely Carmichael-y or Kwame Ture kind of on pointness when he spits. And I also thought of it, I mean, Kanye, I mean, when he drops, I never. Kanye is all over the place because it's his album. So, I mean, that shouldn't come as a surprise. But, I mean, what we know about electronica is that he is more, I mean...
He's a mystic.
Yeah, and the like a written testimony is... was like, you know, how carbon mutates to diamond from the like geological pressure of ages. He's... I don't think he's a reluctant rapper, but he's not a narcissistic rapper, you could say. he's not that eager.
Which really is paradoxical because he's on the definitely most visible and well-known narcissistic rapper on the planet. On his album, you know. To me, J Electronica doesn't seem like that. Like, it seems to me that he doesn't even have to... he doesn't even have to rap. I mean, but he will do it when asked. But that is something, it's just the art is in his exhalation, is in the air he breathes. So it doesn't have to be, you know, put on record and sold.
And I think also...
I love when he puts it on record because I always get uplifted from hearing it. But it's kind of like the Swedish rapper Jacke, who also has this just very...
rarely drops, and when he does, it's like he's killing it.
Yeah, it's just a natural flow where it's like, it's so kind of, you know, can we call it big rap energy or something? Like he has nothing to prove. That just makes his foundation very solid. But when he drops, I never rolled the GSXR or the R6 or the Honda, but I flew my Ducati through North America like Wakanda. Earthquakes will strike this nation for what Bush did to Rwanda, what the Clintons did to Haiti and Downing Street did to Ghana. Yeah. That's where I'm like, okay, thank you.
I think he could like sit equally well as being a minister for the Nation of Islam. And whereas Kanye is trying his best to have the authority associated with Southern Baptist minister or something. And it's weird that, I mean, as much as I admire Ye's attempt to be kind of transparent with like emotional struggles and the loss of his mother and so on and so forth, when Electronica drops his verse, it's just like, yep. So this is the pure, the uncut truth.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One of the mysteries with this album to me is also the title. The so clear kind of homage to his mom. But that's also what I'm missing lyrically on the album. But then again, when something is 27 tracks long, just grasping the whole, all Kanye's verses and understanding, okay, where is he going? Where is he in this?
It could be even that we're like a bit early on this. I mean, it could be that half of it has yet to sink in. But I'm thinking that he's trying to kill too many stones with too many birds with one stone.
Yeah, yeah.
That he wants to make he wants to somehow, from some introspective point of view, he really wants to, address his mother. And but at the same time, then he thinks it's what would be befitting to my mother. Oh, well, that would be my magnum opus. What should my magnum opus be? Oh, it must be the fattest, illest joint of all time. So I'm going to have everybody and they moms on it. And therefore he ends up with having, I mean, it's literally, it feels like there's a collab or a feature on every song, which means that any focus on his mother and his loss, etc., comes sort of, it gets a bit lost on the way. And I'm also thinking with the collabos, I think he almost treats it as a way of manipulating us, the audience, into getting a call and response feeling from it. I mean, people have likened it to gospel, and I can see why or how that makes sense. At least, like, it's a kind of mimicry of gospel anyway.
I think it's more a sampling of gospel than trying to be actual, because I've read reviewers who say that, well, this is, he's trying to make Christian rap, but he's not succeeding in it. To me, he's just incorporating gospel music the same way he incorporated 70s soul samples 20 years ago.
Yeah, could be Ray Charles, it could be.
Yeah, it's just a sonic choice, you know.
Yeah, on one level, but at the same time, all the references to God and stuff, I think it's just...
No, I believe that he believes in God. That's about...
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, I choose to see the gospel elements in the album as just sonic choices rather than... Because I don't think that... I know, going into Kanye and his faith, it's just... That's the part that seems probably most hollow to me. You know? But yeah, maybe in a way, that's also a Christian tradition, you know, believing and praising, Jesus Christ, but that then at the same time being able to do horrible, despicable acts on the side, you know.
Yeah, and also, I mean, is it aesthetics or is it ethics or is it both? And the aesthetics, yeah, you can sample gospel without it having to be gospel. And then if your themes are as... I don't know if it was, I'm just saying he sometimes stands in the way for me to get in that kind of communal mode that I would probably get from.
I find it interesting in one way, Nathan. I don't know what your thought on this is, but where faith and especially Christianity, but also, of course, Islam being one of the maybe most commonly spoken about religions in hip-hop culture, I feel that the challenge becomes for, in a country like Sweden that's so kind of agnostic and non-faith-based, it becomes a challenge, I think, to Swedish listeners to you know, deal with that somebody's, you know, singing about Jesus and God, but at the same time, you know, standing for kind of coolness, fashion, music. That becomes an interesting intersection seen from a Swedish perspective. Or I'd like to see if Kanye rapping so much about Jesus means that kids globally who adore Kanye and adore hip hop culture will now become, you know, it's like, I got to start going to church more, or like, I'm going to start talking about Jesus too. You know, if it becomes, if he makes Jesus trend again in like, in an agnostic country.
And I mean, you and I both, we know friends from the, if you like, Swedish hip-hop community. It's a bit weird to say the hip-hop community, but we come from a time in Sweden when hip-hop was like totally a subculture rather than the lingua franca of
Like we knew everyone almost, or we knew of everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we would, you know, that's that guy on the bus. I know him. I saw him at that jam or something. It's like on an almost, you know, face to face knowing.
First name, absolutely.
Yeah, but some people from that time, for them, some of them have like found God or found religious faith, and that for them was almost like that continuing with the rap life or whatever you want to call it would be an anathema. I mean, it's just like you have to pick one. But I think in the US context, probably it's more, I mean, religion, well, obviously it informs very many people's day-to-day lives anyway, and so does hip-hop. And the part about religion that has to do with the redemption or the redeeming features of it suits kind of well to sometimes the super contradictory life and ideology that emanates from hip-hop, because hip-hop is everything from materialism to idealism to activism to nihilism to, you know, all that infamy. And so I could see how, I mean, I don't know if it's that different from, say, how Al Green would go from a life that he would have seen as sinful to a life as a person who put his faith, you know, as the main motivating force in his life or something. I'm not saying that Kanye is balancing it the same way, but the same things are having to be balanced, perhaps.
Maybe, I mean, looking at Kanye next to someone like James Brown in kind of being a contemporary god of music, and not in any way comparing them skills or talent wise, but because I won't get into that, but just James Brown clearly also being a preacher, you know, but in another form and in another place, but also clearly living a life of sin, clearly being more of the world than of the faith. Whereas Kanye is kind of caught in between those two, you know, or trying to, or maybe we're seeing him try to transform or try to find redemption for all these things that he's been talking about on all his previous 9 records, solo records. I don't know.
And also being like in the mix and in the midst of everything for one period and then being a complete recluse that just, I mean, I think, Public Enemy said, or Chuck D once said that, like, Public Enemy's press conferences were more kicking or live than a lot of people's concerts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes Kanye's absence is more talked about than his presence, even.
Yeah.
If you want to make a comparison.
Absolutely.
And it also, and he has, I mean, that juggernaut of insane speculation, public relations discussions about what is behind this, that, or the other. And that has probably, I mean, we've been fed breadcrumbs for, what, more than a year about an album. And the moment it drops, it becomes like the second most download or streamed album of like all time in the history of Spotify anyway, in like a few days. And that is, so he sets the bar for himself in like, in perhaps not so favorable way, because then if everybody's expectations reflect the amount of attention, it's kind of hard to live up to all that.
That's what I mean. I mean, from a very much an outsider perspective, freeing himself from the idea of himself or the perception of himself is, I mean, it's just a clear, to me in a way, just the being of Kanye West is kind of a testimony to like being black can drive you crazy and or you can go mad from it, you know, and then being black and famous and super wealthy is not a protection from madness, but it can actually just accelerate it. I mean, because on a kind of psychosocial comparison, I wouldn't compare Kanye to any other artist right now. I'd compare him mostly to the previous president of the United States, who I think shows, I think there are a lot of similarities there as far as like the self-aggrandizement, the self-pitying, the ego-driven to the point of just absurdity, and the very kind of childlike behavior. And
can I add to that? I would say as well.
Or stop me.
No. Yeah. No, I want to spin on this. And I would add that there were expectations that we could compare to those to the previous president. That, yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of people had, you know,
yeah,
Kanye, in the way that people hoped that Obama would save America, I think people had the feeling that Kanye, will you save hip hop? And the save hip hop idea, that's all cool in, sometime mid last decade. Or, I'm sorry, second, I mean, in 2005, 2006. That's not save, but it's a super healthy. It was a super healthy kind of inflection into mainstream hip hop. And also, I think aesthetically, when somebody who's smack dab in the middle of the mainstream of hip hop, I mean, if you're basically handling the gear set Rockefeller sonically, then you have so much influence on what the soundscape is going to sound like. And I think at that time, and almost like 5 years before that, there was that Grand Canyon divide between bling kind of mainstream
jiggy rap, yeah,
and jiggy rap and some kind of backpacker indie rap. Like you had on one hand you had Bad Boy Records, and on the other hand you had probably like Raucous or Fondlem or Stone Throw. I mean, I don't, Stone Throw is probably, I mean, they're not that backpackery to me. They're kind of, you know, it's just quality hip hop.
But it's eclectic, yeah.
Yeah, but so when Kanye came, he flipped the script a bit with like how he flipped the beats and how he hooked up samples. So he gave that production aesthetic a bit more of longevity and infuse it back. But I don't know if he can change hip hop in the same way today. I mean, I don't think making that gargantuan 2 hour long albums in itself, it's like, I mean, who is going to remember half of the tracks? I mean, I can hardly remember all the tracks on the Low End Theory.
I think you can. Hold on. If we dig into that, I think we only need 10 minutes to remember all the tracks on.
Now I'm just probably rap them, half of them by heart. But I'm just
the fact that Sadat X was one of the features on Low End Theory.
And
just
Diamond
thinking
and,
about that makes me happy. You know, it just makes me happy. But let me say this then, Nathan. It's interesting, mystifying, and bewildering, I would say, that the best verse on both Donda and Certified Lover Boy, like the best verse I've heard in the past 2 weeks, is a track that wasn't on Donda, but was supposed to be on Donda, but that Drake leaked. So Andre 3000's verse on Life of the Party, I think it's one of the most beautiful rap verses that I've ever heard. It's one of the most heartfelt, open, just human reflections on a son to his mother. I mean, that kind of sums up everything that I wonder if Kanye actually would want to say to his mom, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sums up what Andre wants to say to Kanye's mom about his mom, which is also such a skillful and elegant and beautiful way of saying what he says.
Yeah, and I think I watched this interview as like years old with Andre when he was talking about where he was at that time, I guess. And he was more just as much or more into acting than he was into music. And Outkast were basically not defunct, but hiatus or something, I don't know. But he was basically speaking about that he'd given up on being a rapper or like on hip hop. Not that he gave, he had not lost faith in hip hop, but he had lost faith in him being able to be. I mean, he was talking about like to do the hip hop, you got to be hip, and I'm too old. You know, the youth today, the young cats, they they're killing it. So I can't.
That's kind of how I feel, Nathan.
Yeah, but you shouldn't. but you should welcome the diversity. But the point I was getting at is that I think it was perhaps from when you embrace such an insight or feeling, then that opens up to deliver something else with your music. So when Andre was like, okay, almost like I'm out, then when he gets in still, he drops the bomb. And then unfortunately, it's not in the, on the album. But I think that's the thing with, which is typical for Kanye, but it's, I mean, it's probably just as true about Big Boi and Andre and loads of, or Jay-Z, or that a lot of rappers, they have personas that are so, they're so like entwisted in their own personas. Even Prince couldn't like get out of the constrictions that came from his public persona. He was recluse himself. And then when he came out, people still had, oh, so is there going to be a like Purple Rain track on this new album? You know, because they were wanting more of the same. I think, okay, let's not dissect you, but you've balanced that quite well by just continually reaching out into new territories. So you don't... I mean, not let those kind of stale expectations grind you down. And I guess one part of that, but correct me if I'm wrong, comes also from like Sweden. We're in, at the margin. So just the demographic, you know, the market you have to appeal to has to be, you have to reach for new markets. You have to try new means. You can't just, I mean... Otherwise, you know, I wish there was a Too Short who did the same thing over like 20 albums and all of them were slamming, but nobody's gonna listen to that in Sweden.
Not within hip hop in Sweden.
No, so then I mean if you do start to experiment with like dance music like house, or you start experiment with Caribbean music or African influences in music, and even though it's still held together somehow through rap, the artistry becomes so diverse that you're, I mean, I think truly, I'm saying this, you know, I'm thinking about this, but I think that's an explanation to your longevity as an artist, constantly reinventing yourself. And you also have took time out to do other things. And then that makes it possible to come back with a lot of like more vitality from exploring other art forms.
Because there's something so innately hip hop about playfulness. Even though hip hop was, as you say, it's machismo has been a part of it since it's since hip hop was a child. Posturing, toughness, but playfulness has also been like a fiber that runs through the culture. But I would say in the 2000s, in this new millennium, it's scarce, you know. That's also something that I thought, when I think from now, 2021, to when I heard College Dropout, that again, there was a playfulness and a kind of wittiness and a self-distance that was... like some irony and the ability to laugh at yourself, that Hip hop in its kind of 20s or in its early 30s was taking itself very seriously. And now that, you know, now that hip hop is nearing its 50s, you know, a lot of its demons kind of are coming out in a way. You know,
or
some pathologies are starting to show. And I will say, you know, and we're not going to, you know, talk too much about, I guess, about Drake or Certified Lover Boy, but that came out at the same time. To me, I think undoubtedly Kanye's, undoubtedly Donda's the more culturally important, you know, work of the two. Whereas to me, Drake is more just a, you know, a pop artist who happens to have an extremely golden flow, you know.
I mean, okay,
the guy could flow for days, but at the same time, we have these two artists that are like gods of contemporary music. Like it's like Michael and Madonna, or like, you know,
they're just like Bruce and Prince,
Michael, Madonna, you know, exactly. No, Bruce, Vito and Sal. Where was I getting at with that? But they're two, both albums are so ego driven, self aggrandizing, self pitying. I mean, there's all this like very kind of, it's just ego-driven masculinity, you know.
But I won't argue with that, and I won't argue with that description of either of them. But to me, you know, Ye in one corner and Drake in another, to me, that's like KRS versus Nelly. Sort of, if you like. I mean,
this is very interesting.
I would never otherwise compare KRS, if that was the ring, they would inherit those trunks.
And you know, I wish, Nathan, that just one of these two guys would say even a peep about KRS, because it is a well-known fact that anybody who KRS, like if you have beef with KRS-One, your career in hip hop is basically over after that. you know, Nelly is just like the latest example of it. You know, PM Dawn, we're never again heard about, you know, which was also very odd. That was an odd beef in hip hop.
totally.
You know, people don't even remember PM Dawn, but... you know, same thing with Shan. Unfortunately, they were more, I would say, equals. Anyone who ever tried to take a shot at KRS-One got dissed, and that was that. You know,
I guess it's like Roxanne Shanté is the only surviving person who lived to tell ish. You know, Shan too, but I mean, I heard an interview with Kane when he talked a lot about it, and I think with the whole Bronx Queensbridge thing, that was to some extent some kind of friendly competition still. But with like Nelly, or I think today people are a bit more, you know, sensitive about it, because some of the beefs are basically seen as like attacks on hip hop even. You know, you're attacking our art form or something, which is also a bit weird since hip hop today is so big that perhaps the collective like confidence of being attacked would be like, yeah, so what?
I mean, this is more like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk having beef. It's as uninteresting as that in a way.
Oh, you mentioned Bezos, and I thought about that earlier today. I just felt like, you know, in all its grandeur, what if Donda, I mean, there is messages hidden on Donda. There are messages that are not even hidden. But the massive apparatus that surrounds it is a bit like, if you have somebody building some private run space shuttle, it's as if from some reverse psychology, we're duped into thinking, and then there must be a great message behind it or a great idea fueling it. when it's just like a manifestation of ego. I'm not going to say that Donda is a manifestation of ego only, because it's a lot of things. But this whole super impressive, incredible lineup of producers and again, features and stuff, sometimes I just feel it's like detrimental to
the art.
Getting the message across or you know, I wish, what if he dropped like an EP of six? You remember, like, I'm going to sound like the old grumpy man that I sometimes am. What if he dropped, like, you know, Pete Rock and Seal Smooth, all sold out EP, or he dropped like 100 Miles and Running NWA's? I mean, just that, drop something that is that focused, six or seven songs. That blows everybody away. Or like Showbiz and AG did. I don't know
what that type of wealth and standing does to a human being, but I think we're seeing some kind of, you know, when Drake dropped that video that was recorded inside of his home, that's basically, you know, a palace beyond comprehension, right at the outset of, right in the beginning of the pandemic. And people were like, ah, okay, well, that's really, you know, kind of, that's very sensitive of you, Drake, to show your, you know, the opulence that you surround yourself
flaunt
with.
Flaunt your wealth, that, do it.
Yeah, flaunt your wealth. This is the time for it, man. Really, you know, what that does to people, like, you know, I mean, Jeff Bezos also came up from selling books in, out of his garage, and Kanye carried around his samples in his backpack, and now they, you know, they definitely made something out of themselves, and they made a lot of money out of it. But it also took its toll, you know. And at the same time, I think about diving into some hip hop detail and lore, that the supposed beef between Kanye and Drake, what I can glean from it has its roots in accusations of Drake having ghostwriters, or Ye having ghostwriters. I'm not entirely sure. But since you just mentioned the all sold out EP, I think Pete Rock is the only person who's been forgiven for having a ghostwriter in in all of hip hop. I mean, it was well known that Grand Puba wrote his verse on The Creator, and you can really tell too. But like, nobody minded, because Pete Rock made the dopest beats, and Grand Puba, he chose a good ghostwriter.
But if he would have, like, you know, Ice Cube's Yo Dre stick to producing, if he would have said that to Pete Rock, everybody would still be, okay, this is one of the gods of hip hop. So it doesn't matter.
Exactly. And for Dre, like, we always knew that he had ghostwriters, but I've never listened to Dre as a rapper, even when he's rapping, you know.
No.
But the beats alone, or him kind of as the CEO of the beat making squad that was making Dr. Dre's beats, was just very good at his job.
But the one thing that rings a bit hollow to me about those accusations towards Ye is that his rhymes are a bit too good on average for me to really grasp why he would need like a ghost. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
and besides,
if he was subpar and all of a sudden had like some outstanding rhymes, then that would seem like kind of, whoa, this is fishy. But his raps usually are kind of good. They're good. So why would he? I mean, it doesn't really make sense. It's like if somebody would have, you know, he's not Rakim, he's not Guru, he's not Ghostface, but he's not.
He holds his own.
Exactly. I mean, so it wouldn't really make sense. But whereas, I don't know, Drake has a kind of flow, but I don't know about the rhymes per se.
I can't even get into Drake's subject matter. It's just too much for me. And I think that's what's become really obvious with the release of yet another Drake record, which contains a lot of catchy melodies and some really dope 40 beats and some dope Drake rhymes, but at the same time, I've never really nothing that Drake has, no Drake lyric has is like stuck in my head. But he's made some dope songs. I mean, 0 to 100, you know, Started From the Bottom, or you know, God's Plan, which is one of my favorite tracks, but it's not. You know, the lyrics never really stick.
I mean, it's not,
you know,
carried by the rhymes. It's not. No. It's not that that makes it. But it's also, I mean, so many times when I've been DJing the last 15 years, I mean, I've really, to some extent, drifted a bit from DJing hip hop. I mean, I've never given up on it. I've always been spinning hip hop in the summer.
Don't ever give up, Nate.
No. But when that happens, I'm going to give up on life. But but the thing is, it's more like I think, to me, hip-hop is almost like an attitude. So
exactly. It's the way... A way of seeing the world.
Yeah, and it's like assembling your shit. I mean, it could be the beats, but it could be the sketches in your black book. It could be the rhymes on your rhyme pages. It could be your ideas for sampling. But it could also just be, how am I going to knock the world out with this DJ set? How am I going to... amass all this stuff and hook it up in an ingenious way. So, I mean, for me, it could just be like Kenyan version of Sukus music and mix that with some Jamaican soul covers and lift the drums from that and drop those bombs. It doesn't have to be...
Yeah.
So for me,
but I will say, you know, we could be grateful to Donda for giving us that Jay Elec verse and a lot of dope beats and a lot more memorable rhymes. I mean, the Griselda feature on Keep My Spirit Alive, really, really dope, and the beat too. I mean, there's a lot of good moments on the album. But it's too much. I had to directly just make a playlist, put in my 10 favorite tracks, and that was that. I can't, you know.
Like a hip-hop DJ.
But it's always been like that with when people were dropped double CDs and like, I'm Prince dropping triple CDs and stuff. That the maximalist approach is just, it's a lot to take in, you know. I don't know if you played... Crystal Ball from beginning to end, you know.
No, but I think that development is a bit like technology driven, or like identity meets technology driven, because like, yeah, you know, when we grew up, it was like 12 inches to be played on a dance floor, because
that's all you could, yeah,
because rap didn't get any airplay anyway, unless it was like underground or college radio or something. But and then what we call the golden era is basically the time when hip-hop got the level of acceptance that full-length albums came to dominate, and basically that it was commercially available for more than people who would buy 12 inches. And then come the internet as the main source for music, I think it got sort of diverts into two ways. On the one hand, people drop singles all the time. I mean, you've done it yourself. Like drop a digital release, one or two or three tracks, which is just enough for people's like attention deficit problems or whatever to deal with. Or people drop these insane magnum opus 2-3 CD equivalents. I mean, I've seen a few in my days. I mean, like Tupac dropped one of them, but Goldie, you know, drum and bass producer Goldie, did the same.
Right.
And it's almost like you're making an artistic statement, like something you would get at a museum, at an exhibition, that's not really meant for consumption, but it's more like you've made your
to
mark.
To keep you in the room, kind of.
Yeah, and keep people in awe, like, look what I've done. Yeah. And then to any realistic approach will be, okay, so I'm going to pick my nuggets out of this. I'm going to curate this myself and cherry pick these 2 or 3 or 10 songs were my favorites, so they're on my list. I think that's the only meaningful way to interact with it. And that means that I think everybody's becoming more hip hop because everybody is mixing music in their heads.
Everybody's natural way to consume music.
Yeah. Is, I mean, think of the Herbie Hancock Rocket video. It was insane then. And I know that, like, people who, that was their cue to start DJing. And it was like this whole...
Yeah, because what was Grandmaster DXT, no?
Yeah,
He was cutting on Rocket.
Yeah, but I mean, more aesthetically, it was Goldie and Cream, I think, who did the... We made a video, but it's like a shock introduction to collage art, cut and paste and all that stuff.
Yeah, everybody can kind of be their own DJ Clue today. Like you can drop your own like mixes on your phone, you know.
Yeah, so everybody, I mean, all the kids now making great films and videos. They're taking off from there, but it's just that they only need their own phone. They don't need some super camera, but they actually, they take the train, film stuff on their way. They shoot stuff in their everyday environment and juxtapose it to some bombastic urban landscapes or features and put a rhythm to it. So everybody's a hip hopper. Even the indie rock kids are hip hoppers now. They haven't come around to understand.
Hip hop won over indie rock, man. Yeah. Hip hop won over everything right now.
They just haven't understood yet.
Exactly.
I'm kidding. I mean, obviously, hip hop is a lot of like DIY indie too. From the other end.
Can you call out any favorite tracks from the album from Donda?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Jesus Lord is one of them. But I would say, and this is the old school traditionalist in me, I really liked Heaven and Hell with the Heaven and Hell sample because it's just that.
That's not on my list. This is interesting.
You're kidding.
Yeah. I got to go back.
Yeah, you should.
No, it is on my list.
Thank God. I was losing my faith. Nah. But I have to say, on the other, you know, reversely, that the kind of stadium rock sound that Jail kicks off with, I don't know. What room are we going to, where are we supposed to be when we hear that?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think rap is at a party or at a club or on a dance floor or in your Jeep.
No, I hear you.
Or now, you know,
the Jail track is kind of tired. I mean, to me, to me, the album starts with God Breathed. It's just the Jigga feature on Jail. And
that's the nice thing. Yeah.
But that's the nice thing about that track. That's the only reason
my friend Mander, I think you know Mander?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, he's a friend of mine. He used to do like a lot of posters for my friend Linus and my club at Bring the Noise. Mm. Well, that's like a small, minuscule part of his output. He's done. He's done album covers for KRS. Speaking of,
the legend. I did not know that.
So he's done some legendary stuff. But he's done a lot of like, you know, skateboard art and stuff too. But anyway, he used to say that I love rap, I love metal, but I don't like rap metal, and I get a rap metal feeling of Jail.
Yeah, from that guitar there on Jail.
Yeah, and I mean, and having said it, there is obviously some nice rock rap collabos. Not only good, there's some great ones even.
There are. I would say the most successful melding of rock and rap, it was actually a Swedish artist. In my mind, there's no better example of a rock rap album than Thomas Rorschach's Magic Villa. I would say of all, like, even, you know, within global hip hop culture.
Okay, in my world, he.
So that's a tall statement.
To me, he would have to fight it out with Ice-T, but that depends.
Okay,
on
But Ice-T more went, like, he went 100% metal, like with Body Count, and like really.
Yeah.
He has body count, which is totally in its genre, and then just his own catalog as a solo artist, which is solid in his genre.
Totally. And I mean, I love Rorschach's album, and I really like him as an MC as well. And it was just like he decided to
shout out Rue.
Yeah, shout out. But he went his own way, and it's just that I guess not everybody's looking in the periphery the same way as they do look at something like Donda. And there's some comfort probably in having that space to do stuff that's not on everybody's radar, because you can be a bit more experimental.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It doesn't pay the bills, though.
And it's amazing how much we care about, you know, that it really... having these kind of mass televangelist, the ex-president of the United States style of kind of mass meetings actually worked. Now, like, you know, a significant part of the Northwestern hemisphere is listening to and talking about, you know, about Donda. And even people who don't like it, who don't like Kanye West as, you know,
who as an idea, a person, or what he represents.
What he represents, and the different very strange and sometimes just tasteless things that he does and says. People still kind of care on some level, or love to hate, or just...
I used to say before that I think Jigga, more than anyone, sort of embodies... the triumph of hip hop. I mean, there are loads of other rappers and producers that I rate higher, but I rate Jay-Z. But I'm saying that he was sort of he represent where hip hop became that super mainstream act that people nobody could disregard. And like, okay, if you I'm not going to say that one is bigger than the other, but if you take Beyoncé on the same, we put them on the same board, Super Bowl and stuff. My friend Jacob made the point that he went to see Big Daddy Kane in Stockholm in, I think, 1989. I was there too, but I mean, he made this observation. I think there was like less than 100 people there. It was at a place called Kolingsborg. It was like nobody there. And that was a case where everybody knows each other was there. And then a bit more than two decades later, there's this festival in Dalarna in Sweden called Peace and Love. And JC is headlining, and it's like 45,000, which is a lot for Sweden, music or rock festival. That's like as big as it gets. And he's headlining. So during those two plus decades, hip-hop goes from being in the margins, in the basements, in the poor working-class suburbs, in the, you know, and being the, like, ugly duckling of pop music, but that sometimes has been given the role to represent some kind of youthful vitality and playfulness. And then all of a sudden, it's, like, the biggest thing that everybody... relates to. And when I say everybody relates to, it's also that they sort of relate some kind of hope and also disappointment to. So people follow a thing like a Donda, an extracted Donda release with all these listening parties and stuff. They follow that. They could be following worldly politics. They could be following, I don't know, forest fires in Australia. They could be following God knows what. All kinds of things. But they're following... unless you're living in France, people are following the Donda release as much as they would be following French politics.
It's a testament to how much culture means to us. I mean, and specifically, I guess for you and I, how much this culture means to us. But
yeah,
it becomes almost like it's a global event in a way. You know.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear. I mean, I'm sure kids in Mumbai to Mombasa to Mongolia are blasting Donda too. It's not just the Northwestern Hemisphere.
Of course not at all. But I want to know if it's like, is this a Pyrrhic victory or is it a victory? Because there's like a kind of fallout from this development. Mm. And I don't want to.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Blame Ye in that way, because if it was a Pyrrhic victory that hip-hop got the sort of center stage, it's not any one person. It's more some people were catapulted there because of hip-hop's dominant position as a cultural force.
Global cultural force, yeah. Mm. No, 100%. It remains to be seen, but I guess we can land in the fact that, you know, no matter what we, you know, the different pros and cons of this, you know, seen as just a musical album or a musical body of work, it means a hell of a lot, you know, even when we don't understand what that is or that it seems meaningless or poisonous even, but it means something, but it's early to see exactly what, you know. Nathan Hammelberg, thank you so much for coming on This Moment. My brother, it's always uplifting to be in conversation with you. You know, it just, it makes my soul smile, man.
So, likewise. It's been great.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
To be
thank
continued.
You so much. To be continued, and everybody out there, listen to your favorite hip hop. Thank you for tuning in to This Moment, and we'll catch you next week. Peace.
Peace.